Consider this. 100% of owners will leave their business one day, but few are prepared. Are you? Don't worry, you're in the right place with this podcast, Succession Stories. Host Lori Barkman, the business transition Sherpa, guides you from transition to transaction, from building value in your business to letting go. Lori is a business transition and M&A advisor, specializing in growth, acquisitions, and selling owner-led companies. She's also the author of the Business Transition Handbook. Get your copy and learn how to avoid succession pitfalls and create valuable exit options. Sign up for a business transition newsletter at successionstories.com. Show us the love by subscribing to the show and posting a review. We appreciate you. Now, here's this week's Succession Stories with Lori Barkman.
Welcome back to the Succession Stories podcast. If you're not already, please give me a follow on LinkedIn and Instagram at Lori Barkman. Be sure to subscribe to the show, and if you enjoy it, leave us a review. Go to ratethispodcast.com/successionstories. Ralph Ward is the editor of the Corporate Board magazine and an expert in corporate governance. He's the author of 6 books on corporate governance and board issues. I asked him to join me on the show to talk about best practices for private company boards. It's about governance and strategic guidance. Boards aren't just for large public companies. Even newer, privately held firms can benefit from having a board. Boards also get involved in CEO succession planning. We address challenges faced by family businesses and how boards can help navigate these complexities. Enjoy this Succession Stories episode about why your company might need a board with Ralph Ward. Ralph Ward, welcome to Succession Stories.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to it, Lori.
This is going to be a great conversation. I haven't covered the topic of corporate boardrooms for a while on the show, and you are clearly an expert on this topic of corporate governance. We're going to talk high level, and I think we're going to help our audience understand why this is important for them. So why don't we start with you? Tell me about you and how you got started in what you're doing.
Well, I started as editor of the Corporate Board magazine here in the U.S. It's over 30 years ago now here. It was an interesting time to be getting into research and best practice on governance because people were just starting to shake up, wait a minute, why isn't this working for governing our corporation? So it was a lot of reform, a lot of discussion, very much enjoyed it. I'm still editing the corporate board, though it looks like I might be retiring soon. Half your life writing about corporate governance can get to be a bit much. But doing that. And in the late 90s, I launched my own side gig publication, Boardroom Insider, which was a little more closer to what I call boardsmanship. The corporate board was the 30,000 feet level issue, great themes of corporate governance and global issues. Boardroom Insider is more in the nitty gritty. How do we run a board of directors? How do we make it work? Because it's such an impossible task. And it's gotten more impossible every year for directors on that. That took off well. Over the past 25 years, I've written 6 books on corporate governance and board issues. I have a 7th in the works here. And I do quite a bit of training and speaking in the U.S. and overseas on boardroom best practice, making boards practical, helping them achieve their best selves.
Clearly, you're an expert. When we talk about boards, are we only talking about publicly traded companies or are we also talking about privately held companies?
That's the amazing part of this, because it is sort of a Lego construct for running a business, and the same rules and most of the same legal structures apply, whether you are talking about Apple Corporation or a major European or Asian corporation, or whether you're talking about Joe's Tool and Die down the corner in the U.S. somewhere, where the board consists of Joe, Mrs. Joe, and his accountant. They have many of the same legal structures. Generally, when you're talking about younger growth companies, they're dealing with board issues. And that's one of my main topics here, is trying to steal good ideas for putting a board to work, making it effective at the very basic level for younger corporations, because it makes a huge difference in their future prospects.
Our listeners are primarily in the private market, so we're going to focus on that today because I think that'll resonate. And also, most of our listeners are with mature, established companies. There may be listeners who are part of startups and younger companies, as you said a moment ago. So in thinking about the age or size of the company in the private market, what are some of the characteristics as to when a board starts to be formed and what type of board?
The market you're talking about here is one that benefits from this. And too often, though, they don't really see how it can benefit them until some sort of a crisis strikes here. Succession planning and implementation is one of the biggest ones. I see this a lot with family businesses, founders who have trouble letting go, founders who are dealing with multiple generations of a family business, trying to make that coherent, make it well thought through. And as you have doubtless seen, it's something that's bobbled an awful lot here. Founders who have built this don't want to let go. Founders who don't want to let go, but give the impression they are, but are actually pulling the strings from behind, in some cases, even undercutting successors here so they can keep power going here. It's something that's going to happen. It's inevitable. Memento mori. I'm sorry, Mr. Founder, you're going to die one of these days, or better yet, you want to get away and go off on your yacht and do some golfing and like that. So make it worthwhile, make it work for you. And a board of directors can be hugely helpful in that. What often happens with the private sector and younger companies like this is the board will be, two or three members of the family, three or four members of the family, maybe the company accountant, a crony of the founder, something like that. It's valuable. It's certainly better than nothing, but it's really not delivering the governance that you can get if you add even one or two outside independent members that don't owe anything to anybody here. And it's valuable because then you can custom tune those outside directors to exactly what the enterprise needs. Maybe they have grown a company to the next level. With private firms, family firms, I always tell them, if you're operating at this level of growth, get an outside director who has savvy at this level of growth. They can help you grow into that. And they've been there and done that. If you've got someone who has dealt with succession issues in their own companies and their own background, that's gold to have on the company board in this situation for the private company. They've been there, they've heard the excuses, they know where the roadblocks are, and they can help ease a founder out because this is obviously someone who you have to respect. You've probably seen this when families get together, they can squabble, they can have all of their family politics and drama. When they have an outsider, like a new in-law or someone, they tend to be a little more formal and a little more proper. Let's not air our dirty laundry in front of the outsiders here. And that's actually a pretty good thing in a boardroom because it forces the people who are insiders who work with each other to straighten up their act a little bit when they get someone from the outside who's objective, and they can also then gain an outside broker who's objective. Someone who can sit down with the founder and say, it's time. Someone who can sit down with the family and saying, you don't have a succession plan that's going to work, so it isn't. They have to be listened to in those cases.
Are these fiduciary roles that you're primarily talking about in this type of advisement on the board? And maybe let's explain, what does fiduciary mean?
That's where it gets into the big difference between public and private and all of the other sphere companies here. If you have ownership, however the ownership of a corporation, even if it's an LLC, is structured, someone is a fiduciary for monitoring that. They have to represent the owners. Is it the owner who's representing the owner? Cool. That's great. That's a good way of doing it. But when you start getting minority ownership, multiple generations, levels of investment from various funds, then you're going to have people representing different interests as fiduciaries. They're there to look out not just for the interest of their own ownership block, but also for the long-term interest of the enterprise itself. And they have to be able to come into the room, shut the doors from the outside, and focus on what is in the best interest of the long-term organization. And sometimes that goes against what the short-term interest can be. But that is the fiduciary duty. Public companies, it's much more spelled out as a duty of care and duty of loyalty with all sorts of legal whips and clubs to enforce it there. Private companies, not so much, but the same basic rules still apply.
An advisory board, in comparison to a fiduciary board, what is an advisory board?
An advisory board is essentially a kitchen cabinet, and it can be a valuable growth stage for young companies here. Getting a formal group, usually of outsiders with some inside input here, get them together a few times a year, get them around a table, take them out for dinner, get a review of what's going on. They have no fiduciary duty to the organization. They report solely to the founder or owner of the organization, but they can be a good reality check chorus on the outside for doing that. And they allow you to go through various stages of growth. If you're in a acquisition stage, put together a short-term group of people who have experience in M&A and get them together informally. What do I do? Bounce ideas off them. What are your advice? Here's where I'm planning on going. When you move beyond that stage into a different growth sector, you can reconstitute it. It's sort of like Lego blocks. You can assemble an advisory board for whatever you need. But again, they don't have legal fiduciary duties, and they have no real power in the organization. They can tell the owners and the founders X, Y, and Z is a good policy. Founders and owners are free to ignore that if they want.
Yeah, I think that's a really important distinction, especially your point earlier about succession. A fiduciary board is looking out for the best interests of the company and the owners, and they, correct me if I'm wrong, are also responsible for CEO decisions. So if the owner is the CEO, I guess that could be a sticky situation, but certainly succession would be something to discuss in the boardroom and bring it to a vote. Whereas in an advisory board, they may be able to weigh in, but they do not have a final say. Is that a decent explanation?
That is, yeah. And succession is something, as you mentioned here, you can come up with a very nice advisory succession plan. Owners free to ignore it if they want to. And family businesses, especially having a formal board operating this way, is important because the younger generations have a real interest. What's going to happen here? Dad isn't going to be around forever. Maybe dad doesn't want to be around forever. Do we have a plan on who's taking over? Do we have a talent development schedule for that? Is everyone agreed on it? So in those cases, you want to have a succession plan that actually has some teeth in it.
This episode is sponsored by the best-selling book, The Business Transition Handbook, How to Avoid Succession Pitfalls and Create Valuable Exit Options. Business owners will learn how to navigate the emotional and practical nature of the transition process to avoid exit regrets. It's crucial to start planning when time is on your side so you don't leave money or your happiness on the table. Reading this book, you'll have Lori Barkman, the Business Transition Sherpa, guiding you along the way. To download a free copy, head to thebusinesstransitionhandbook.com. That's thebusinesstransitionhandbook.com today.
And a company might consider having an advisory board when it's in the growth stage, I think is what you said. It also might be ready to bring on outside advisors at a certain point in its life cycle. That's my experience, where it's a 50 plus year old company. The second generation is running the business. The first generation has passed away. And they're siblings. So there's there's complex relationships there. And they brought in outside advisors to to assist, as we've been talking about. So that's some of my experience and seeing that up close. And then, of course, talking to different clients and trying to understand, well, what level of governance do they have and what might they need? So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the benefits of having some governance. If they are a upstart company, a startup, or a newer company, this might seem like overkill, right? Why would they bother? Why do they have to go through this rigmarole? What are the benefits from your perspective?
You put your finger on the issue here. If you're a younger growth company, if you're a more informal private family company, here's what a board meeting, and if it's constituted as a corporation, there needs to be some sort of a board there. Here's what it looks like. The people who know each other and work together day by day might get together for a few minutes. The founder, owner jots some things down on the back of an envelope that we got to cover and get board approvals on today. Run it through real quick. You know, we talked about this over coffee last week. We already know about that. Okay, then write down an absolute minimum of paperwork to show that you legally did it. And then you go on to switch hats and go back to what you were doing. It works for a lot of companies. Sailing a cruise ship with no lifeboats works as long as you don't hit an iceberg or something. But that's what governance does. It backs you up. And it makes you raise your game a little bit. It's sort of like the broken windows syndrome here. If you attend to some little things on a board of directors, if you put together a formal agenda for your board meeting, if you carve out several hours for it, even if these are people who are working together day in and day out, if you take proper minutes of it, if you put together a good information package before the board meeting, then that's the broken windows effect sets in. Everyone starts taking the governance role a little more seriously. They tighten up their tie. They follow better procedures and they start focusing. Because if you think of it, if you have all of the day-to-day managers getting together just for a few minutes as a board meeting, what are they doing? They're handling this or that legality that they've got to get approval on or whatever, and then they go back to whatever they're doing. No one is thinking long-term. They're fighting day-to-day battles. They're bringing them into the boardroom with them, and they go out with them the same way. Getting them apart into a focused board situation with all of these little paperwork backup things gets them thinking long-term. They start wondering, well, where are we going to go 6 months, a year down the road? Not how are we going to meet payroll next week sort of things. It pries them out of that, thinking outside the envelope for everyone's favorite cliche here.
And I think that's important.
It benefits
important
down the road, too, because think about it. Maybe you're selling the company. Maybe the successors, the kids and the family really want to sell out. Maybe it's a younger venture company that's looking at a liquidity event down the road. Well, what is going to bring a better price if you have this wonderful paper trail of board meeting minutes, all of this paperwork, formal approvals, charters and bylaws? Yeah, these people had their act together. That's going to increase the value down the road. So I tell younger startup people here, it's like carving out some of your first paycheck and putting it into a retirement fund. Yeah, you don't want to do that, but you do it anyway because it's smart and it pays compound interest. Same with good governance.
Absolutely. And it's a foundational theme for this show. How to create value over time. Mm-hmm. And investing in good governance is one of those ways to do that. It makes your company more well-run. A more well-run company leads to higher valuations, and so on. So like you said, there's a compounding effect. So it's really important. And we do recommend it. You've mentioned that you're thinking about retiring and doing something different. And you've got so many things that you do, author and speaker. What are the things that you want to do in retirement, Ralph? Have you given that some thought?
Well, the seventh book, I came up with the idea and started working on it 2 years ago, which is pretty shameful. I should already have it out there by now. But pulling away and doing that, doing more training and speaking on corporate governance is another thing that I personally enjoy. This is something that you mentioned here, a good telling quote. I hope I'm not giving it away too early, but a fellow named Mark Nadler, he was with Spencer Stuart. He has his own business consulting firm, wrote an article for the Corporate Board magazine a couple of years ago with one of my favorite quotes about boards of directors. He said, "Boards were never intended to do real work. And as a result, they share none of the characteristics of high-performing teams. Boards were never intended to actually do things, but now they have to. Compliance, disclosure, legalities. At the public sector companies, yes, but in private companies too, they have a lot more oversight duties. And if they fail on them, the compliance issues are massive. The SEC just came out with their new cybersecurity disclosure rules. You have to disclose a major incident within 4 days of it happening. That's a pretty strict timeline, and you've got to get the board involved in monitoring something like that and approving it. They have to do a lot more. They have to do it faster, and they don't have the tools and the knowledge to do it. Corporate boards are still a cottage industry around the world. They have very similar duties, whether you're in the US or China or the UAE or Britain. But how you actually do it, the nuts and bolts aspect, everyone's been left to reinvent the wheel themselves. And too often they reinvent square wheels at it. So what I like doing is going around talking and sharing all of these little tips and tools on making your board work better, dealing with drama in the boardroom, all of the nuts and bolts things, as I said. And everywhere I speak, someone comes up with we had that problem and here's how we fixed it. And everyone goes, oh, that's brilliant. Why didn't we think of that? And I steal the idea and share it with the next group here. But it's a little bit corporate board evangelism. I go around sweeping up and sharing information around the world. I enjoy that. It benefits globally corporate governance, and look forward to doing more of it.
That sounds awesome. So let's start to wind down here. I want to summarize a little bit some of the themes that you mentioned about why a company may want to have a board, types of things that they would assist in. One is succession, growth, crisis management. The fourth one that you and I did not talk about is innovation. So I want to throw it out there. Are you seeing that corporate boards or advisory boards are making an impact when it comes to innovation, particularly around the role of artificial intelligence or AI in companies?
A hot topic, and it's a matter of getting people who know that in your advisory board and in your advisory circle here. AI has become such a land rush item over the last year here, and suddenly AI experts are, I use ChatGPT on an article here. I'm an AI expert now, so put me on your board. And I'm not that impressed with it yet, but it's important. And one thing you mentioned here is innovation, but one thing that you left off the list and is crucial is networking opportunities. If you think about the people you have as advisors or board members, especially when they've made their bones in the field for decades, they have huge networks of very, very important people. When you have them on your advisory board or on your regular board, suddenly they're part of your network too. Do you know someone who's dealt with this issue, who's maybe a new regulatory item, reached out to this new market or this new country for product? Yeah, we did that a few years ago. Here are the lessons I learned on that. Directors love to assume that they know everything, so you just open them up and they'll share all of their knowledge with you. But that's a valuable thing. They can make connections. They can spread knowledge around from what they've gained. If you're wise, and a chief executive particularly, you make full use of that.
Here's the mic drop, last question. One or two things that you would give as advice for companies thinking about starting up a board?
Reach out of your comfort zone and reach for the stars here. As I said, if you're starting a board, venture companies especially, you've got the investors here, you got the founder, and that's about it. They're talking with each other all day long. Someone knows someone or has a connection with someone who is way up there who has accomplished what you want to be is at the level of company you'd like your company to be in 5 or 10 years, ask them to be on the board, especially if they're retiring and winding down their careers. Aim for the stars. Get them on your advisory board. They have good knowledge. They're going to have everyone's respect. They can be an honest broker because they know this is someone who's been there and done that. Make that part of what you do. And as I said, get the stupid little paperwork things done. Once you make that muscle memory in the boardroom, you're going to keep on doing it. And you go from, why do I need an agenda for this board meeting, to why don't we have a proper agenda for the board meeting? Build that in.
Great. Ralph, if people want to learn more, get in touch, what's a good way to do that?
Stop by the boardroominsider.com website. I'm in the process of redoing that, another one of my retirement projects, but I've got information there and the books, consulting I do, writing that I do here, and I'd love to reach out. Some people just send me an email and say, how do I deal with this problem on the board or in getting myself on a board of directors? And I'd love to help them out. It's fun.
That's fantastic. Ralph, thank you so much for coming on Succession Stories and having this conversation with me about corporate boards.
Thank you. I've been looking forward to it. Have a good day, Lori.
Thank you. And to our listeners, thanks for tuning into Succession Stories. If you enjoy this episode, hit subscribe in your favorite podcast player and be sure to also check us out on YouTube. You can find all the notes and links from the show on successionstories.com. Tune in next time for more insights from transition to transaction. I hope that today's episode resonated with you. What actions will you take as a result? If you want to grow, sell, or transition your business, our strategic transition planning process provides clarity and objectivity on the big questions that may be weighing on your mind. Make an intention and take the next step. Set up a complimentary consultation with me to discuss your goals at thebusinesstransitionsherpa.com. That's thebusinesstransitionsherpa.com.